Good evening and welcome to Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. I'm Darren Helwedge. The 2015 protests at the University of Missouri brought down the president and chancellor of the university and have led to other changes here on the MU campus. There was an article published recently by Ben Trachtenberg. It was published in the Washington Post, looking back over what happened then, what's come since, and how a lot of the problems here at the University of Missouri are problems that are happening at any college or university. Ben Trachtenberg is a professor at the University of Missouri Law School and was, at the time of the protests, the head of the MU Faculty Council. Ben Trachtenberg will be our guest this evening and talk about the article and about the 2015 protests and what's happened at Mizzou since. That's tonight on Thinking Out Loud. All right, it's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. This evening on the program, we are going to be talking about an article that has been written recently by Ben Trachtenberg. He's with the University of Missouri School of Law, and it is a look back at where the University of Missouri is nearly 3 years now after the protests here, and talking about how things have changed at the university, some of the things that haven't, and just kind of a background on the whole thing. And it will be published soon in the Kentucky Law Journal, and a shorter summary of it was published very recently, July 25th, in the Washington Post, and a lot of people saw it there in the Washington Post. Ben Trachtenberg joins us, and Ben, first of all, welcome. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much for having me.
This is obviously, I've been on this campus for more than 30 years now. This is obviously, for our time, one of the really big events of what's happened here at Mizzou. Talk about what led to the writing of this paper and just kind of your interest level in what's happened at Mizzou since the protests.
Sure. Well, I became chair of the MU Faculty Council in the summer of 2015 with zero expectation that the next year or so was going to be nearly as exciting as it turned out to be. And so all of a sudden, I was in a lot of rooms when a lot of things were happening. I don't want to overstate my role as a major player, but I got to observe a lot of things in any event. And I found that in the immediate aftermath of the protests, there was a lot of news coverage that I thought was inaccurate. And some of that was because people are in a hurry and they're summarizing events at a place far away, and people are more interested in football games than faculty council minutes. But other things I think were maybe inaccurate because people were trying to grind certain axes or push certain agendas and used us in that way. So I've been thinking for a long time that this is a story that needs to be told in more detail. And I'm certainly not telling all of it, but I'm trying to tell part of it that I had a good view of.
And first of all, I agree with you that there has certainly been some people using this to push political views in one form or fashion, and some of it, at least a little bit, a twisting of it, and some of it outright falsehoods. Let's talk about what the situation was at the university, first of all. And one of the things I found very striking, and I've tried to tell people about this because I was certainly aware of it being here on campus, is the fact that this did not start with a group of students suddenly becoming mad with a president and a chancellor that everybody else was in love with. There were problems on campus, and particularly with some of the deans and some of the faculty, before the protests.
Yes, I would say there's two sets of problems. One is discontent with certain people in the administration, and the other are problems having to do with racial justice and other forms of social justice that don't have anything to do too much with particular administrators. So no one is going to argue that there were no racial problems at MU before Tim Wolf and Bowen Lofton became president and chancellor. I mean, it would just be preposterous. Anyone who's been here a long time knows that, like basically any university you're going to find in the United States, there are issues having to do with racial justice because they're located in the United States, where we have issues with racial justice. And of course, with the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson in 2014, people were thinking very hard about issues of fairness toward young black people that maybe some people had the luxury of not thinking about. So people who don't live in a neighborhood that was policed the way Ferguson is policed or was policed in any event. People who have some comfort that other folks might not have, maybe didn't have to pay a lot of attention to it. And all of a sudden, because of the advent of cell phone cameras, because of the advent of social media, spreading of news, people were aware of things that otherwise they weren't aware of. Meanwhile, in parallel, for things that had almost nothing to do with race or any kind of student activism, we had some deans who didn't like their chancellor. We had a chancellor and a president who didn't get along. We had curators who weren't really keeping their eye on the relationship between the president and the chancellor and allowed that relationship to get really toxic before they intervened. And there was some faculty discontent with certain administrative decisions as well, questions about whether there had been sufficient shared governance on any number of decisions. And so there were a lot of people asking hard questions about certain administrators well before the students started pushing very hard.
One thing that you point out is you spend a little bit of time with the history, and I grew up on a college campus, and I know that Mizzou did not invent racial strife, but there is a history here that if people aren't aware of and they want to understand what was going on here, they need to understand, and certainly African Americans on campus are very aware of the history.
Sure. I mean, we had this is a university where we really went out of our way to avoid integration. People started suing the University of Missouri to force this university to admit black students as far back as the 1930s. The School of Law is famous because of the Lloyd Gaines lawsuit. Yeah. The School of Journalism went and closed a program to prevent Lucille Bluford from enrolling in it. And those folks now have things named after them at the university, but they didn't get to go here. And then the people who came here starting in the 1950s had a lot of the problems that newly integrated institutions presented to formerly excluded minorities all over America. And we had a lot of the problems that Missouri has. I mean, Missouri is not some place that is uniquely bad for racial justice, but anyone who's paying any attention knows that Missouri has some problems having to do with race and certainly had some problems a long time ago and even today has by no means gotten rid of them. Mizzou also had activism related to South Africa, where there was a lot of student activism and led to real change. Questions about divestment led to our connection with the University of Western Cape, which is something the university can be proud of and likely wouldn't have happened had there not been students pushing here for change.
I remember this very well because when I came here, when I first came to Mizzou, there were shanty towns out on the quadrangle. That was just really happening. Ben Trachtenberg with us again. He's got a new perspective in the Washington Post. It's called Much of What You Know Is Probably Wrong, a Mizzou professor explains the racial protests that toppled a presidency. It is a summation of a longer work that's going to be published soon in the Kentucky Law Journal about the lessons for higher education policy and administration of the University of Missouri protests. Ben, for the, I guess to sum up in a quick and dirty fashion, we could spend obviously hours on this particular subject. You mentioned Ferguson, but why specifically do you feel like this happened when it did? Because we know that there were things going on with racial problems on campus and people concerned about injustice on campus and equality on campus. There were problems with people concerned about the administration. This did not just happen overnight, but at the same time, boy, it sure fired up quickly out of not nearly as much.
I think the shooting in Ferguson is a bigger catalyst than many people might realize. We have a lot of students from the metropolitan St. Louis area. We have a fair number of students who are from Ferguson itself.
Yeah.
We had a lot of students who went to some of the protests after the shooting of Michael Brown and went to additional protests after the decision about whether the police officer who shot Michael Brown was going to be indicted. And I think a lot of people, in addition to being very upset about the shooting, of course, were also very upset about the police response to the protesters and about how the protest was being characterized. We saw very quick demagoguing of some of the protesters by politicians. And I think students came back, and I certainly can't speak for them, but I heard many of the students saying for themselves that they had a lot of questions and they wanted to have a chance to talk about it. And so there were a lot of conversations about race at Mizzou in the 2014-2015 year. And so people were talking and talking and talking and saying, what can we do to make Mizzou a better place? And I think some folks started to say, I'm not satisfied with the answers I'm getting.
I want to ask you about something, and this is just kind of a theory I've had in my head, and I remember thinking it at the time, and I was the sports director for the radio station at that point, so I was spending an awful lot of time around the football players, and people will remember that the football team was became a very important part of the story that happened here. And we saw some things happen with how the protest was organized. I picked up on talking from with the students that I talked to, the student athletes that I talked to, that regardless of whether people agreed or disagreed with the issues, whether they agreed or disagreed with the topics, there was something very genuine about this. I have seen political movements and protests that had consultants and planned out very wise political strategy, and there was not that wasn't happening here. We saw the protesters do some things, particularly in relation to the press, and you just go, wow, that wasn't the from a PR standpoint, the wisest thing to do. But these guys were shooting from the gut.
Well, I think what you say about genuineness is true, and I felt that as well. But I wouldn't discount the level of savvy and planning that our protesters exhibited. I think, frankly, the story of the internal workings of some of the student groups is a fascinating one that I was not competent to tell. And my article is not trying to tell that story, the internal organization of the students, how certain decisions by students about what tactics to use were made, simply because I don't have the knowledge necessary. And that would be a wonderful story I'd like to read.
Yeah.
But I agree with you in the sense that I went out on the quad when the students were sleeping on the tents. My son went with me and we met people and were talking. And there was a real sense that people were there because they wanted change. And then the involvement of the football team, while again, I think the story of exactly how that happened is somewhat ambiguous, there have been news reports of a couple of students who just went because they heard on the radio about what was happening, went and talked to some people, said, I don't think this is right. Let's talk some more. Talked to some of their teammates, got some more of their teammates to talk to some of the more prominent student activists and said, we want to help the way we can.
I try not to play the card of I know more than you do, but the one thing I know that most people don't know, or a lot of people don't know about this, is these guys are trained. It is part of how you win football games, to care about other people. And we saw this when Michael Sam came out, and there was so much less concern and problems that within the team, especially publicly, than there might have been. And it's because they talk about how do you deal with a situation, how do you treat people with whom you disagree, etc. And these were very bright young leaders, and so them bringing that into the conversation certainly added a lot to it. We mentioned it a moment ago, but talk about what happened with Professor Click and just kind of how that incident, and again, like everything else we're talking about, it was certainly used in one form or fashion by a lot of different political agendas. But talk about what happened with Professor Click.
Sure. So I know what I know, and I don't know what I don't know.
Okay. Right?
So she was involved in the sense that she had been out, like many faculty were, but I don't have any sense of exactly how much time she spent out there or what precisely she was doing. But I know, like a lot of people, folks were tired. After the resignations, there had been people who had been out all night. There had been people who were bringing food to the students. There were people who were there. And the situation was somewhat fraught. And you had mentioned the interactions between some of the student activists and the press. And the question of whether there's any ability for students to say, listen, I want to be left alone while being on public space, is more complicated than I think a lot of people want to admit. It's very easy to say, if you don't want to talk to people, don't stand on a public quad. I get that. On the other hand, if you've ever been with a couple of kids where one sticks his finger next to someone's ear and says, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, you know that even when you're in a public space where somebody else has the right to be, you might have some justification to say, give me a little room. And so the no media zone. I'm not going to endorse the idea that students can create a huge no media zone on a public quad. But the idea that the students had some right to say, don't stick your camera in my tent or get that microphone out of my face, that's a different issue. And frankly, many of the media folks, both from Columbia and from all over America, were giving a little bit of room. But not everyone was. And I think Professor Click got involved in a moment where some of the student activists were trying to say, leave us be. Some folks were saying, fine. Other folks were saying, I have a right to cover a media event on a quad, a news event. Those are very legitimate perspectives that it's not easy to immediately say, here's where you can stand and here you can't. If people want to start a human chain and sing a protest song, is that allowed? Does it become not allowed if a media person is trying to walk across where that chain just got formed? And so that, I think, is more complicated. What I think is less complicated is, are you allowed to push the camera of someone who is filming some student protesters? The answer to that is clearly no. I don't think Professor Click would disagree with that. She has freely admitted that she messed up, that some of the things she said and the tone she used, she regrets, that particularly her physical act of jostling a student's camera when that student was trying to film was not the kind of thing that she would have done in retrospect. Mm-hmm. Then the question is, what does that mean? To some people, that meant, oh, now Mizzou is exhibiting the hostility toward free speech that is infecting American higher education. I don't take that as meaning what some people say it means, but that is certainly how it got portrayed.
Yeah.
And it got portrayed as maybe this is not really a student thing, but there are faculty trying to run it or something like that, and I would disagree with that completely.
As I said earlier, would as well. And it's always important to note, we talked earlier about Ferguson and the way the protests in Ferguson were covered by the media left some with a real sour taste in their mouth. And for somebody that comes from the world I come from the world a lot of other people come from, saying there's a reporter here that wants to talk to you is going to be very different from somebody that lived through Ferguson and saw what that turned into on television in some cases, and maybe a level of trust with the media that other people, it's like cops. Some people grew up being told the officer is somebody you trust. Others have been taught you better be careful what you say and what you do when there's an officer there.
Yeah, you can acknowledge that there were protesters in Ferguson who committed crimes like vandalism and that there was some amount of looting, while also acknowledging that the media suggesting that that's what everybody was up to in Ferguson did a disservice to readers and viewers. And there were a lot of peaceful protesters at vigils in Ferguson, including Mizzou students, who then got to see it described as rampant lawlessness. And particularly the people who thought that the shooting was justified were going around describing it as lawlessness in favor of a false narrative smearing some police officer. And when that story is being advanced, you can imagine how some of our students say, why should I expect our story to be accurately told by people who don't know me?
Our guest is Ben Trachtenberg, University of Missouri Law School. Again, the forthcoming paper is in the Kentucky Law Journal. An article ran just a few days ago. Again, the title is Much of What You Know is Probably Wrong. A Mizzou professor explains the racial protests that toppled a presidency. You can find that at our website. Go to kbia.org and just click on this story. We will have this story on the Thinking Out Loud page, and we will include links for the Washington Post article. I also want to make clear that there was a response from Christian Basie from the University of Missouri, and there's a link there as well, and a link to a forthcoming article that is a lot more in-depth than the piece in the Post, 46 pages worth, as a matter of fact, that's going to be coming out soon in the Kentucky Law Journal. Ben, you spend quite a bit of time in the larger paper under a section that's just simply titled What Exactly Went Wrong, Specific Lessons, and there's three or four things listed off here. Talk about what the university did that could have been done better in this fairly short period of time.
One of the things the university did was move too slowly when the situation demanded quickness. So when the student activists stopped the homecoming parade, for example, they needed to get a response from the administration much more quickly. And I'm not talking about what Tim Wolf did that minute when his car was stopped, because it's easy to Monday morning quarterback a guy who was maybe stressed out when his car got stopped by people he didn't know. But the literal Monday morning that followed the homecoming parade, I don't understand why that Monday or that Tuesday or that Wednesday there wasn't outreach to some of the students saying, please come by University Hall and sit down with the president. Mr. Wolf would love to talk to you. I think similarly, when the video of Melissa Click went all over the world, the university moved too slowly to figure out how we were going to respond to it. It created the perception that the university either approved of her behavior or at a minimum was hoping it would blow over and we wouldn't have to do anything and that there no action would have to be taken. And I think a lot of that is attributable to two things. One is the administrative dysfunction that we had these folks who didn't get along, so the president and chancellor couldn't sit down together and say, how are we going to respond to this? Because the chancellor was wondering if the president was going to fire him. Mm-hmm. And the deans and the chancellor couldn't get together and say, how are we going to respond to this? Because the deans were busy plotting to convince the president to fire the chancellor. But another is that I think people were simply less aware than they are now of how, when there's a tremendous amount of social media, you have to move more quickly than might have been tolerable 10 or 20 years ago.
And that is an adjustment that a lot of these people who have, and let's be clear, Dr. Lofton had been a part of universities for a very long time, Mr. Wolf had not, but there's a way things are done in higher education, and it's very frequently, let's take some time, let's study the issue, let's give all sides the opportunity to speak, and let's mull it over, and that's not always the most efficient way of doing things.
Well, and I'm all in favor of deliberative governance of the university, but it's one thing to say we need to take a while to decide how we're going to respond to this important issue. It's another thing to say, I'm going to wait a couple of weeks before I even sit down and talk to you.
Talk about what's happened in the years since and kind of where Mizzou is now. One of the things you mentioned in a section that is got a very interesting title here, Loving Mizzou So Much It Hurts. This protest and the different ways in which different people perceived it, it hurt the university. Enrollment was down. Now, there are a lot of factors in enrollment. Enrollment was not down just because of this event, but that may have had an effect. It certainly had a political effect in Jefferson City and in the funding of the university.
Sure. If you talk to Michael Middleton, he'll talk about how when he went down to Jefferson City, he just had to learn to be patient as people gave him a tremendously hard time. And that's part of life. When you're a university president, particularly in a state system, you have to go deal with the legislature. And when people are mad at you, they're mad at you. But yes, we got a very bad reputation with a lot of important constituencies. And I try to make as clear as I can in the paper that you can say that the aftermath of the protests cost the university a lot of money without blaming the protesters for mm-hmm. that financial problem. So the underlying racial issues that the protesters were demanding attention for, those issues led to the protests.
Yeah.
Our response to the protests led to the escalation of what were frankly not that uncommon in the world of universities to become greater levels of hostility between the student activists and the administration. The students didn't come out and say, we want Tim Wolf to get fired. The students didn't come out and say, we're occupying the quad immediately. There wasn't a student saying, I'm starting a hunger strike immediately. The students came forward and said, here are some real issues. Now, can people criticize some of the requests or demands that the students made? Sure. And perhaps some of the people in administration sitting down with the students, listening more carefully, talking more openly, could have said, here are some things you've wanted, you've requested, that I can't deliver for you. Here are some other things that I can deliver for you. Let me explain to you why that is. If you think something I said I can't do actually can be done, help me understand how maybe I can do it. And those are the conversations that have to happen if we're going to move forward when there are tremendously difficult problems in higher education.
Okay. In higher education, And that's a point I wanted to make sure, and as our time's winding down with Ben Trachtenberg here, I wanted to make sure we hit on the stuff we are talking about, concerns between the academic units and administration, racial injustice on campus, how old traditions at universities are seen differently by students of different backgrounds, fighting about how higher education is funded, and what happens with that money, free speech. This is a tale as old as time, and there are as many of these stories as there are colleges and universities probably in the entire world and certainly in the United States.
Yeah, there isn't a university in America that couldn't do more if you gave them more money, including Harvard and Yale.
Yeah.
And while I can joke that Harvard has so much money, maybe they should just give us $1 billion and they wouldn't notice it and we would. Even at Harvard, there are things that the president's office has to say no to. And certainly in the world of public higher education, where we're competing every year in the state budget with the K-12 institutions, with the highways, with the prisons, with Medicaid, with the pensions for state employees, there's always going to be genuine and legitimate debate about how much money should go towards state higher education and how much we should put on the backs of the student tuition payers and their parents.
Right.
There's always going to be a debate about what the universities should teach. Now, I'm of the opinion that those are decisions that should mostly be driven by the faculty with some guidance from the administration. On the other hand, if you accept tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars from the state to help fund your university, you can't be surprised that the legislature, which is elected by the taxpayers, has some interest in what that university does,
right,
and will make its interests known. So yes, these are debates that are going on. So while we had unique manifestations of certain issues at Mizzou, we didn't have weird issues that nobody should have foreseen. Even at Howard University, there are debates about whether the administration is doing enough to advance the cause of African-American students.
Yeah, yeah. That's, like I said, that's universal and a concern that's probably going to continue in about 60 seconds that we have left here. Talk about what's different at the university now and what still needs to be done.
I think people are more open now to talking about some of the issues raised during the process than they were then. But I think we still have a lot to do. I think there's still some desire to say, well, that happened in the past and now we're past it and enrollment's ticking back up and isn't that great? It would be a big mistake for us to miss this opportunity to confront problems and seize opportunities to become a better place.
You can find the article at our website, kbia.org, or you can find it at Washington Post or Waypo.com. Much of what you know is probably wrong. A Mizzou professor explains the racial protests that toppled a presidency. Now, the full paper, all 47 pages of it, will be published by the Kentucky Law Journal in the future, but there is a link and you can read it online right now, and that is also available through that Washington Post article. Ben Trachtenberg, who again is a professor in the School of Law here at the University of Missouri and headed up the faculty council in the time we're talking about here, has been our guest. Ben, I appreciate your time an awful lot.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that is our show for this week, Thinking Out Loud on KBIA. We'll be back next Tuesday evening with another Thinking Out Loud on 91.3 FM. Till then, I'm Darren Helwedge. Have a great evening.